Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, December 13th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk to Dan Branch about his Tuesday evening presentation on the Enoka Wilderness Area. Lieutenant Chris Sell and Larry Spangler will be here to highlight the Year of Kindness. We'll talk with Midgey from Juno Food Tours about upcoming wine education classes. And we'll have choir and orchestra students from JDHS talk about the winter concert series happening next Tuesday and Wednesday. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Currently 13 degrees in the capital city.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonia Gonzalez. The chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe warns the fight over the Dakota Access Pipeline project is not over, despite the recent ruling by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. In a written statement this week, Dave Archambault II points to Energy Transfer Partners' motion for a summary judgment against the Army Corps decision as a reason to remain vigilant. Archambault says he is seeking meetings with President-elect Donald Trump and his choice for Interior Secretary Kathy McMorris Rogers to help facilitate the upcoming process on the draft environmental impact statement mandated by the Army Corps. But he says it's important to not lose momentum with the remaining days of the Obama administration. Cherokee Nation officials say a lot of time has passed since the tribal government banned same-sex marriage in 2004. A new opinion issued by the tribe's attorney general now recognizes same-sex marriages. As KGOU's Brian Hardzinski reports, tribal sovereignty means the Cherokees and other tribes were not bound by the 2015 U.S. Supreme Court decision that made same-sex marriage legal in all 50 states.
In the opinion, Attorney General Todd Hembree wrote, the Cherokee Nation's constitution protects the fundamental right to marry, regardless of the gender of those in the relationship. That ruling strikes down a 2004 law the Cherokee Nation enacted specifying marriage recognized by the tribe had to be between a man and a woman. Hembree's opinion says Cherokee beliefs about sexuality and gender roles changed after contact with Europeans and the introduction of Christianity. He wrote oral histories, quote, suggest a tradition of homosexuality or alternative sexuality among a minority of Cherokees. About three dozen Native American tribes provide legal recognition for same-sex marriage. For National Native News, I'm Brian Hardzinski.
The Cherokee Nation also made a statement this week in support of the decision by the U.S. Mint to issue a $1 coin honoring Sequoia next year. Cherokee Secretary of State Chuck Hoskin Jr. said in a written statement, the coin is a wonderful national recognition for the renowned statesman and creator of the Cherokee syllabary. Referring to the recent decision to remove Andrew Jackson from the $20 bill and the honor for Sequoia, Hoskin says it is good to see the United States Treasury take Native history in America into account for its monetary creations. The Sequoia coin is part of the Native American $1 coin program designed to celebrate the important contributions made by Native American tribes and individual Native Americans. Some Washington State University students are getting a chance to do some design work that they normally might not get until after graduation. As Steve Jackson reports, the students are working on landscaping designs for the Coeur d'Alene tribe.
Earlier this year, the city of Coeur d'Alene dedicated a statue of 19th century Chief Morris Antelope at the confluence of Lake Coeur d'Alene and the Spokane River. Now, students from the WSU School of Design and Construction have been tasked with making plans for the landscape surrounding the statue. Assistant Professor of Architecture at WSU, Steve Austin, says the Coeur d'Alene tribe asked the students to prepare the designs and asked them to consider both the tribe's past and its future.
So our students have developed, for example, a heritage walk along the riverside that would have interpretive signs and additional sculptures that would tell the story of the tribe's past, present, and future. Other ideas for the area include using Native plants that were important to the tribe.
At this stage, the tribe has no specific plans or funding to pursue construction of the landscaping, but the six student designs will be used as concepts to raise funds to hire a professional design team to utilize the original plans to come up with a final design. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
And I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Ramona Farms, wholesome and delicious heirloom crops for a better diet to benefit all people. Christmas delivery of foods from our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions available on orders placed by December 15th online at store.ramonafarms.com. Support by Northern Arizona University, a university committed to serving Native American students, offering opportunity in every direction, in Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state, and online. Learn more at nau.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here today on Tuesday, December 13th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and joining me in the studio now is writer Dan Branch, and he will be doing a reading tonight at the Downtown Library at 6:30. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks, Scott. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. So the Innoko Wilderness Area, you spent time there last summer. Tell us where that is and how it came to be that you were an artist in residence there.
Okay. Well, it's the Innoko Wilderness Area is in western Alaska. Most of it is drained by the Innoko River, and also it is near the Yukon River. So it's maybe about 400 or 500 miles upriver from the Bering Sea. It's nearby are the Athabaskan villages of Shagluk, Grayling, Anvik, and Holy Cross. And during the trip, we visited all four of those. And I was there as an artist in residence. When they U.S. Forest Service program, they include in the word artists to include writers. And so it's an opportunity for writers or for fine artists to go out into the wilderness and experience it, and then to express their feelings about it in the form of their art. So for me, it was the essay. I went through that area in 1980 when I was a legal services lawyer in Bethel. I had been asked to go along with some fish and game surveyors so that they could ask questions of salmon fishermen out in the villages. And so we stopped at all the fish camps. We went down the Innoko. We went through the area that is now the Innoko Wilderness. That was in 1980, about 6 months after the trip. Congress, as part of the D2 bill, created the wilderness area. And so I think they asked me, they offered me that chance to go out there because I'd had that experience in the 80s, you know, so I was... It was a bit of a homecoming for me. I hadn't been back. We moved down to Ketchikan in, at 88, 89, and really hadn't been back in that country for a long time. So that was a big part of it for me.
And is that about when they made it a wilderness area?
Right. They made it in 1980, but it was like a few months after I had gone through there. It was part of the D2 bill.
It may sort of speak for itself, but what do you think Forest Service is after? You called it the Voices of the Wilderness program?
Right. I think they want to increase the awareness of the public in the wilderness, what it has to offer, why it's important. And so one of the requirements as a payback for being an artist in the residence is that you make some kind of public presentation. So that's what I'm trying to do tonight.
Okay.
It's to sort of let people, you know, tell them what, get them a chance to figure out what the Innoko Wilderness Area is and what it meant to me. It's so hard to get to that very few people will ever go through there. Ironically, the Iditarod, I don't know if it's ironic, but the Iditarod, when they run the southern route, go through a part of it or really close to it. They go from Shagluk over to Anvik. But other than that, it's pretty much... off the map. One thing I didn't tell you, Scott, or I didn't mention in the backup material I sent you, was that the Fish and Game had released about 100 wood bison in Shagluk about a year before I went up there. And so part of this was kind of a hunt to see if we could find some. So we ran around and looking for them. We finally found one. Wood bison used to be all over western Alaska, and then they died out. Fortunately, there was a remnant herd near Northwest Territories in Canada, and they've used that as a seed herd and then transplanted some to the Shagaluk area. And they're doing pretty well, but they're pretty hard to find.
How would you describe to our listeners some of the country you saw up there?
It's very flat. For the most part, although there are rolling hills, it's a lot of trees, a lot of taiga. It's not, you know, it doesn't have the rich beauty of Southeast Alaska. It doesn't have big soaring mountains. There's no glaciers. There's a lot of, it's like almost like Montana, big sky feel to it. Yeah. Green, lots of green, and then the rivers. And it's hard to travel through, so by foot. So it's all about the boat or snow machine, dog team in wintertime.
Okay. Your essay is a braided essay. Maybe
right.
Tell our listeners what that is and what are those two braids that you'll be reading about tonight.
Yeah, a braided essay is basically one that has, like a rope, is woven together of strands of different stories. Mine's fairly simple. It just has two strands. One of them describes my visit to the country in 1980, and the other one describes the one last summer. I wrote the one for 1980 in the past tense and the more current one in the present tense to help people not be too startled by the mm-hmm. breaks, but it gave me a chance to compare, you know, what I saw then to what I saw now and what that meant to me, you know, what were the lessons learned, and, you know, I was sharing a little bit of the emotional experience. It was a good and bad experience for me, yeah.
Okay.
Well, not good and bad, but, you know, emotionally it was up and down.
What was sort of maybe one of the highlights of the trip, or maybe one of the highlights of composing the essay in retrospect?
Well, I think, you know, as far as the highlights of the trip, I guess one is finally finding one of those darn bison, which found us kind of. We were just going down the river looking for one where they might have walked off until we could once again go off into the meadow somewhere to look for them. And we looked up, and it was just looking at us. It was just right on the edge of the riverbank, just kind of chewing its cud and staring at us. But I think probably the highlight of it was one of the morning of the last camping day when we were on the Noko getting ready to go down to Holy Cross on the Yukon River. I was naked taking a bath. Nobody else was around. It was like 6 in the morning, and these wolves started howling nearby. So it was a very powerful experience. I've always there was a young wolf really near our camp, and then his pack was howling. You could tell they had a deeper register of the howling. They were howling. They were trying to reconnect. Somehow this young wolf had kind of maybe wandered around to figure out what we were all about. And I think it was interesting to me that happened off of the wilderness area, and. It made me think about, you know, these lines that we draw on maps to designate areas as wilderness and non-wilderness. When, you know, if one of the litmus tests for wilderness is, the abundance and behavior of animals, we had a lot of the experiences that you would expect to find in wilderness off of the wilderness area. You know, like we were going down the river and a moose would swim right in front of the boat, you know. And it wasn't that they just swam in front of the boat. It's just that they were going about their business. And as long as we gave them space, respectful space, they did not panic. And, you know, they just, big bull moose swimming across the river, came up, climbed up out of the water, shook off the water and walked in just very calmly and majestically into the trees, you know. And I think one of the things we like to find in wilderness is that chance to see animals acting as if we weren't there, acting like they would when they're not under the stress of having a lot of people around. And probably we as people would like to be able to be in places where we're not stressed by other folks. And that's one of the things the wilderness offers us, I think.
Okay. You said the reading is going to last about 30 minutes?
Maybe 30, 35, yeah.
And you're going to show slides?
Yeah, photographs that I've taken both in 1980 and during the trip, yeah.
Okay, it sounds very interesting. I've had the good fortune of reading your prose before, and it's really well done. Thinking about that, I like to ask writers when they come on the show, tips for other writers, if we have any writers listening right now. How do you make sentences like you do?
Oh, well, as far as making sentences, you know, I think making them be clear, not too fancy. Use normal words. Use them well. Read Strunk and White, but don't take it too seriously. And when they say keep it short, let yourself write longer sentences. I think as far as creative nonfiction goes, it helps if you're a bit of a detective and you're writing about something that interests you and you have to communicate to the people who are your readers what is interesting to you in a way that makes it interesting to them. And so if you can do that, I think you'll be successful.
Okay. So tonight, 6:30 at the Downtown Library, a reading by Dan Branch here on his experience, two experiences in the Anoko Wilderness area. Dan, thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anything else you want to add about tonight's reading?
I don't. I just appreciate the opportunity to let people know about it. And also that I appreciate the opportunity given by the Voice of the Wilderness. And any artists or writers out there that are interested, I encourage them to check in the spring to see what's on offer and apply.
And just to double check, I'm sure tonight is free, right?
Yes.
All right. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
I'm on the road, here in the modern world. support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, showcasing a variety of artwork every first Friday at the Downtown Cafe. More information at heritagecoffee.com.
Do you or someone you care for live with chronic pain or chronic disease like high blood pressure, diabetes, or heart disease? You can learn to manage the symptoms, understand the disease, and communicate more easily with providers. Find a list of Living Well classes offered around the state at livingwell.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and the American Diabetes Association. Aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, December 13th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 21 minutes after the hour. And joining me in the studio now is the Juno Police Department's Lieutenant Chris Sell. Welcome to the show, Lieutenant Sell.
Thank you for inviting me.
Nice to have you. So we were just talking about this. You are the Lieutenant of Patrol,
That's correct, technically speaking,
right? But we see you a lot in the public.
Yes, you do. I have a very supportive boss in the Chief of Police, Bryce Johnson. And so I come to him with ideas a lot. And he lets me run with a good portion of them, not everything. Sometimes he's like, no, we're just not going to do that. I had the purple hair idea for Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and he said, yeah, we're not doing that. But most of the time, he lets me run with ideas that I think are going to improve our relationship with the community or improve the quality of life in Juneau.
And this, we're here today to focus on the Year of Kindness in 2017.
Yes.
Was that your idea as well?
Well, it was. I was spending some time a couple of months ago just racking my brain about what could the Juneau Police Department spearhead that has the potential to improve everyone's quality of life in town, and it can't cost any money. So that was kind of a high bar. And I thought and thought and thought, and an idea came to me of doing a community-wide Year of Kindness. Kindness doesn't have to cost anything, and yet it has such a huge impact on people to both give and receive kindness. When you give kindness, you feel less stressed, you feel more powerful. When you receive kindness, you feel connected, you feel part of something, you feel appreciated. So it just didn't seem to be any downside to it. And I went to the chief and I said those words that I so often do as I cross his threshold and said, "Chief, I have an idea." And he said, "What is that?" And I said, "I would like us to lead a community-wide Year of Kindness." And then that led to calling it 17YOK. So it's 2017, a Year of Kindness. Now, there's a whole steering committee that's running this. And I am on the steering committee, but we also have lots of partners in the community. And can I just explain kind of the basic
Please
premise?
Do. Yeah.
So the Year of Kindness is really very simple. What JPD is asking the community to do is for everyone to do at least one act of kindness a day, and for once a week to direct that act of kindness as someone who's outside your normal circle of associates, someone of a different socioeconomic status, a different religion, a different race, a different color, some person that is not part of your normal circle of associates. So that's the biggest part, is those daily personal acts of kindness. Now, along with that, to make it seem a little less overwhelming for groups that wanted to do kindness activities, is we have a calendar where people have selected kindness surges, a week that that group is going to do a series or even one, you know, kindness event where they're going to reach out to the community. And that allows JPD to feature that activity on our very popular Facebook page and really build a whole environment of kindness. Now, what we're hoping to do is to prove that kindness can improve the quality of life across a community. Now, how are we going to prove that? That's kind of tricky. I mean, how do you measure kindness? We can't put a thermometer outside and figure out how kind it is. But we have partnered with an international nonprofit called Random Acts. They're sending one of their staff members to Juneau during January of 2017. Then they're going to send someone back a year later to see how we did from their perspective. And at JPD, we're also going to be measuring a number of things. like our disturbances, our noise complaints, our road rage incidents, attempted and completed suicides, things that indicate to us that people are not getting along with each other or in crisis. We've also talked to the school about measuring serious discipline issues, and also to the hospital about measuring, can this affect how healthy we are in town?
Okay.
So we are hoping to prove that kindness can improve an entire community.
It's an experiment, really.
It is an experiment. I think it's a pretty good experiment in that, okay, you're a little bit kinder or you're a lot more kinder, but there's not damage to be done either way. So we feel like it's a great experiment to do. Now, when I was pitching this program to Random Acts, I told them, you know, a little bit jokingly that Juneau is the perfect place to try this, because we're a community that values kindness already, and there's no road out. So we are particularly positioned to want to get along with each other. So I think this is the perfect place to see if we can embrace kindness as a community. And we are first. We haven't found any other community that's tried to do this.
Interesting. Give us a couple examples. So there's the one a day that you recommend.
Sure.
Every person in the year of 2017 does one random act of kindness to somebody close to them, probably.
Correct.
And then the one a week outside of their
Correct.
Circle, their social circle. Can you give us a couple examples?
Sure. I've been practicing. So I've racked up a few examples because I've been getting myself ready for this whole year of kindness. And my husband's been on board, too. He's been practicing. Like, one of the things he did is we heard our neighbors unloading some things. So he jumped up and went out to offer to help. So that's an act of kindness. And he got particularly lucky because they were almost done. So, but he was still reaching out to them. I've started doing things like carrying plastic bags in my backpack, and I've picked up doggy doo that somebody else has left. And there
You're
is nothing grosser. I know we're not doing this for credit, but I really did expect applause to spontaneously start around me. It didn't. But it also made me think about the fact that if I had left that there, and it's a place I walk by all the time, that might have bugged me a little bit each time I saw it. And that takes a certain amount of emotional energy from me. But if I just fix it, then I didn't get the applause springing up, but I felt good about what I had done. And I don't have a spark of any irritation is that it continues to be something I see day after day for however long
Sure.
it lasts. It is something that takes practice. I've had to push myself outside my comfort zone, especially when it comes to reaching outside your normal circles. There was a lady at the restaurant when I was eating with my two goddaughters, and she had obviously been to church. She was in her church clothes. It's Sunday morning, and she's sitting by herself, and I watched for a while, and she's definitely alone, and I thought, you know, I should set a good example and ask her to join us. And I have to admit, when I stood up, my heart's pounding. This is not the kind of thing you normally do. You wonder if that's going to be rejected. But I thought, you know, I want to push myself outside my comfort zone. So I asked her if she wanted to join us, and she got this big smile. And my goddaughters and I met a new friend. She's super cool. We had a good time having breakfast with her. And then we went our separate ways. But hopefully, as we practice kindness, we'll get better at it and feel more comfortable with situations like that.
Okay. This sounds like a lot of fun. We're still in 2016, but it's not too early to start practicing.
That's right. That's right. You can start getting your rhythm down. And mostly what it takes is paying attention to what's going on around you. And the focus is not on money, but sometimes someone in the grocery store ahead of me was 30 cents short and was going to put something back. And you know what? I can cover that with the change in my wallet. And I wondered how many times, as I got better at that and paying attention to that, I wondered how many times has that happened and I was on my phone or going over my to-do list in my head and just not really present with what was going on. And you've got to be there to see opportunities for kindness.
Okay. And we talked about the hashtag earlier, hashtag 17YOK.
Thank you for teaching me that. You've already racked up an act of kindness today.
Okay. So people should take pictures if they want.
Right, write, absolutely.
Or write something up and hashtag 17YOK.
Well, let me tell you about this website, too.
Okay.
Random Acts is building us our own 17YOK website. And we're going to link that off the JPD website so that you can go on there and anonymously report acts of kindness you've given or received, because people don't like to feel like they're bragging. And I get that, even though I did do some bragging this afternoon. But people may not want to put their names on it, but you can put those in anonymously. And we will have a sample daily log that a volunteer is going to share their list of daily acts of kindness. We'll share ideas and stories. And we really think that this website is going to be a lot of fun. So that's something that we're just getting built, and we plan to have that out at the first of the year.
Sounds good. Any events coming up between now and then?
Oh, yes. I almost ran out of time to talk. It's just so exciting. I can hardly get everything in. So the steering committee and I talked, and we had this feeling that, you know, 2016 was not a great year for a lot of people. There was a lot of negativity around us. There was a lot of horrible things said. It was really hard to go through 2016 without accruing some damage. So we decided to have a couple of events to just close that chapter. On New Year's Eve, we're going to be at Sandy Beach from 1 in the afternoon to 3 in the afternoon. And we are going to have a potluck and a sock drive for officers to have socks to give out to some of our homeless folks. And we're going to have a fire there where you can write down the things you're going to leave behind in 2016 and burn those up. So we're just going to make a real gesture of closure for 2016. Then we're going to repeat the same thing on New Year's Day out at Auk Rec between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. So if people don't want to drive too far, we'll have a couple of them. So that one may involve the polar plunge. I have reached out to those folks, and I know myself I'll probably end up plunging if we have the polar plunge in conjunction with that second event. Now, the third event, this is super exciting. We are going to have at the Capitol on the first day of the legislative session an encouragement. An encouragement is the opposite of a protest. We're going to make signs to tell our legislature that we know they can tackle these problems. We're happy to have them in Juneau. That mutual respect rocks. And we're going to ask people, set aside your agenda for this hour on the first day of the session, just for an hour. Put aside what you want the legislature to do, and let's just cheer on our team as they go from the locker room to the field, and they take the field to do this incredibly important work for Alaska. Let's just cheer them on. Let's not worry about which team members are your favorite for that hour.
Okay. And first day of session, January
17th. January 17th. So I'm working with one of the elected officials to figure out what time we're going to do that. We don't have a time yet, but I'm really excited about that. I think that is the perfect way to show that Juneau is the best capital city that there is.
Okay. Come back and see us in early January. Let's officially kick off 17YOK. And talk more about that event. But in the meantime, get ready for New Year's Eve Day at Sandy Beach from 1 to 3, right? And New Year's Day at Auk Rec.
That's correct. And if you want to talk to us about acts of kindness or ideas that you have, 17YOK has its own email. So 17YOK@junopolice.com gets you to the steering committee.
Okay. And your Facebook page is also a great place to learn more about what you're up to, right?
Well, it's not terribly organized on the Facebook page, but we will be getting things up on our website that will help give little blurbs. It's kind of hard to put blurbs you see all the time on Facebook, but we will be having things on the JPD website and also that link to the 17YOK website as we get that underway.
All right. Lieutenant Chris Sell, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
In Alaska, the economy is changing.
We are not generating enough revenue to pay our daily bills.
The energy industry is changing, and so is the landscape.
You know, you appreciate things as they become diminished in your life, right? I mean, you look at them differently when they are disappearing.
Alaska's Energy Desk is following those changes from the state capital to the North Slope to the Kenai and then Alaska. Follow us on your local public radio station.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, December 13th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. And now in the studio is Midgie Moore from Juno Food Tours. Welcome to the show, Midgie.
Hi, thank you. It's great to be here.
And also wine expert and educator Keith Crocker. Welcome to the show, Keith.
Thanks for having us, Scott.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. So wine education classes. This sounds like fun. Midgie, tell us about them.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. So what we decided to do was for winter to offer locals and visitors something fun to do is more than just a tasting, because I love going to all the wine tastings and beer tastings and things, but I think it would be really fun to do something just one step more and do education. So I enlisted Keith's help, and we have arranged for classes all winter long on wine education. And so every person that comes, they'll taste great wines, they'll pair it with small bites and cheeses and things, but also they get educated not only how to drink wines or taste wines and things like that, but also how to pair it, what works. And then each guest also receives a hardbound journal, a personal wine journal that they can carry with them to other events.
That sounds like fun. You said that you want to call it wine education.
Yes.
But Keith, there will be tasting there as well, right?
Yes, definitely. What we decided was, I think the best idea is to really taste through wines and talk about them. And the main thing is people like to ask a lot of questions at these tastings, and this is a good opportunity to get those questions out there, and I can do my best to answer almost all of them.
Okay. And so this will be, the first one is tomorrow, Wednesday, right?
It is.
6 p.m. at the Hanger Ballroom?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a cost for the event?
There is. It's $89 a person, and you can book it through my website, junofoodtours.com, or you can call me directly at 723-8478. If you want to pay at the door, you just need to confirm a reservation. If you haven't confirmed a reservation, we may not have enough space for you because tickets are selling pretty well. So we want to make sure that we have enough wine and food for everybody. So please confirm those reservations.
Okay. Keith, what are you going to focus on tomorrow night?
We're going to focus on South America. A lot of people associate South America with just Malbec, and there's so much more out there. I'm going to touch on Chile, a little bit about Uruguay, and, of course, all the great places that grow wine in Argentina.
Okay. And you also mentioned there's some snacks involved.
Yes. We'll have cheeses, nuts, marinated olives, and we also will have some small bites. I'm very excited about the beef tenderloin slider with the chimichurri sauce. We'll have a shrimp appetizer as well. All of that is included in the ticket price, as well as, of course, learning all the wonderful information that Keith will be sharing with us.
Okay. You both work in this field, I know. Sort of, what has inspired you to learn so much about wines? Maybe start with you, Keith.
I've been in the business for a long time, and it seems like the more I learn, the more fun it is. It was a little intimidating at first, but once you get going and start learning more and more, it turns into just a lot more than just a beverage. There's a story behind every wine. There's geography behind every wine. There's a lot of hard work that goes into making wine.
And there's something about pairing the right wine with the right meal, right?
Oh, it's like a transcendental moment when you get the perfect pairing. It's it doesn't happen all the time, but there's a few general rules that you can go back to try to find the perfect pairing. And a lot of people come up with these meals and they'll say, hey, what goes with this? What goes with that? It's a lot of trial and error, but there are some rules that go along with it.
And I'm sure you'll be talking about those tomorrow.
Most definitely.
How about you, Midgie? Passion for food and wine.
Yeah, I grew up just loving food. My family, long line of cooks. But my thing about the wine was that I didn't know anything about wine at all until about 8 or 9 years ago. And I lived in Salt Lake City at the time. And I went to a wine education class that was in a small cooking school. in Salt Lake. And I love the fact that not only did I get to pair it with cheeses and things, but I had wines I never would have purchased myself. I wouldn't know how to go into the store and pick one out. But I learned that my favorite thing is red wine and blue cheese. That could have that for dinner. And it was so fun for me to not just learn that, oh, I like this wine, and now I know why I like this wine, but also I don't have to like an $89 bottle of wine. I can like a $12 bottle of wine, and that's okay too. And it was really fun to just, it opened up a whole world for cooking for me. Like, I now cook more with wine. I enjoy just tasting wine at home. And so it's just really funny. It just kind of opened up this world of food and beverage for me. And the more I learn, the better those experiences are for me.
Okay. Learn more about all of this tomorrow night at 6 p.m. at the Hangar Ballroom. Midgey, remind us of the website to get tickets.
It is junofoodtours.com, or you can call me at 723-8478.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Midgey and Keith. Anything else either of you would like to add?
Yes, just want to give a little shout out that I have been asked a lot about my Prohibition dinner that I do during the winter, and that will be starting up in January as well.
Great. Thanks, you too.
Thanks
Thank
a lot.
You so much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 13th of December, 2016. It's the birthday of the poet Kenneth Patchen, born Niles, Ohio, 1911, author of more than 40 books of poetry like Before the Brave and Hurrah for Anything, and novels including The Journal of Albion Moonlight. Kenneth Patchen, who said, "Think enough and you won't know anything." It's the birthday of the poet James Wright, Martins Ferry, Ohio, 1927. Went to Kenyon College on the GI Bill after World War II, studied writing formally. First book of poems, The Green Wall, in 1956, and then St. Judas 3 years later. Wright thought that he was finished, that he'd said everything he had to say, and then he met the poet Robert Bly and Bly's wife Carol, and they befriended him and took him with them on their Minnesota farm. James Wright said, "They loved me and they saved my life." And it's the birthday of Mary Todd, born Lexington, Kentucky, 1818, to a well-off family. She was petite, had sparkling blue eyes, reddish-brown hair, highly educated, interested in politics, moved to Springfield, Illinois to live with her sister, and it was there that she met Abraham Lincoln. They were opposites in many ways, and she was also being courted by Lincoln's political rival, Stephen Douglas, who Mary Todd turned down. She and Lincoln had a stormy on-again, off-again courtship. They broke up and they got back together. In 1842, they married, moved into a boarding house where their first child was born. She suffered from depression, anxiety, paranoia, and migraines. Her time in the White House was not happy. After their son Willie died of typhoid fever, Mary Lincoln was crippled by grief. After her husband's assassination, her health declined. She was nearly destitute for a time, committed to an insane asylum, attempted suicide, and spent her last years at her sister Elizabeth's home in Springfield, rarely coming out of her room. Here's a poem for today by Franny Lindsay, "My Mother's Shoes." Toward the end, she only wore her brown ones, the Velcro not quite holding anymore, toes scuffed from Wednesday ballroom class, sand for melting snow embedded in the soles. She had others, concert pumps, her shearling slippers, flip-flops for the cape. These stayed lined up beneath her dresses, expectant, but her husband always fetched the brown ones, helped her to the armchair, eased the crew socks past her bunions, rubbed her vein-mapped calves, slipped the left one, then the right one on, the way a kindergarten teacher helps a scared new pupil into her galoshes. Then he placed each foot, each gorgeous foot against the wheelchair's rests and wheeled her deferentially to the dining hall for breakfast. My Mother's Shoes, a poem by Franny Lindsay, from her collection If Mercy, published by The Word Works, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Fox Searchlight, presenting Jackie, from director Pablo Larraín, starring Natalie Portman as the First Lady in the days following the assassination of JFK, as she fights to cement her husband's historical legacy in select theaters now. And by Staples, offering tech services for small business like PC setup and repair. More at Staples Stores or staples.com/tech services. Staples, make more happen. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, December 13th, about 10 minutes till the top of the hour. And now in the studio is basically, we figured out the percussion section from JDHS. There are four seniors almost halfway there. Emily, Bethany, Sean, and Ian, welcome to the show, you four.
Hi, hey. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So we're here to talk about tonight's concert and tomorrow's night's concert at JDHS. They both start at 7. Who wants to start and tell me a little bit about what people can expect tonight?
So tonight, it'll be start off with the string orchestra, and then it'll follow with our advanced choir, and then a combination between the beginner, intermediate, and advanced choir. And basically, tonight will be a bunch of holiday-based tunes, and just to get everyone ready for the season.
Okay, so that's tonight. And what about tomorrow?
For tomorrow, we're going to start with a bunch of Christmas ensembles that we perform at the Governor's Mansion. And then we're going to perform three musical pieces for concert band and wind ensemble. It's Into the Raging River, Festivo, and How to Train Your Dragon. It's an ensemble. I mean, it's a medley. And then at the end, the jazz band is going to perform their pieces.
So it does sound like a big variety. It's all going to be holiday themed, though, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You are seniors. You've probably been in these programs for your whole existence at the high school.
Pretty much.
Tell our listeners what choir, orchestra, and band are like. I mean, we've all seen Glee. Is that what it's like over there at JDHS?
We're kind of a family, and we hang out with each other a lot. And
it's close. There's probably a little bit less spontaneous breaking out into song.
Darn it.
Well, not from Bethany.
It must be fun, though, because I know it's a lot of time and a lot of work you've all spent in those rooms practicing, right?
Yeah, and we travel a lot together. We go to all over Southeast for festivals and spend a lot of time together.
I bet. And so family came up. That's probably a theme. What else sort of inspired you to be part of this?
Good question.
What about the love of music?
Oh, yeah, we enjoy performing, and
of course.
It's kind of like a workout for your brain halfway through the day. I feel like, you know, I leave band class, I'm like, woo, I'm ready to, I go to math right after that. So I'm like, I'm ready to do those times tables.
Yeah, it's like really relaxing period. Yeah. And then you go to your classes, and your brain is pretty well rested.
And our conductors just make it fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Parents to us.
And you're all seniors. You're almost halfway there. Do you all plan to do music in college or somewhere else after high school?
Like, I'm not gonna have it like as my main like a major or something, but
keep it around.
Yeah, keep it around.
Definitely perform in whatever voluntary band they have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping to go down south and audition for some of the marching bands because we don't have a marching band here. But since I play percussion, I'd like to do maybe bass drum or cymbals because, you know, you don't have to be amazing at rhythm. But, you know, you can have fun on the field. So.
Yeah, I bet. OK, give us the details again. A concert tonight.
The concert tonight will be at 7 at JD, and that'll be opening with string orchestra and closing with our choir from JD.
All right, and tomorrow?
And tomorrow at 7 is the band concert, where we start with small ensembles, and then the wind ensemble and concert band will perform, and then the jazz band for the closing.
Okay, holiday-themed music. Is there a cost to get in?
No, it's completely free.
If somebody's never been to one of these, how would you convince them to go? Why should they come out tomorrow night or tonight?
It's a good something to do, and, you know, it's free entertainment. I mean, hey.
Yeah, you see our students work hard and perform their pieces that we've worked hard.
To see all the talent in this town.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. Emily, Bethany, Sean, and Ian, thanks for coming on the show. Again, a concert tonight at JDHS at 7. It's free, and tomorrow at 7. They're both free. Anything else any of you would like to add?
Hope to see you there.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks, you four.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, we'll find out about the Juno Mendenhall Flying Lions Club Christmas Light Flights. I'll be on the show to tell you about Thursday's Writer's Showcase, the recording of that. Photographer Chris Miller will be here with a preview of his Wednesday night lecture at the Alaska State Museum. And we'll find out about the Juno Douglas High School Art Show. Matt Lillard and Jeff Raclow will be here as well to discuss Eagle Crest operations, Being a Friend Day, and Eagle Crest gift ideas. Let's take a look at the weather here. It's currently 13 degrees at the airport, and the forecast tonight calls for clear skies with a low around 6 degrees. For Wednesday, the forecast calls for sunny skies with a high near 28. And on Thursday, again, sunny skies with a high near 27. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.